Welcome to Cardamone Law University, translating the complicated Pennsylvania workers' compensation law into plain English for injured workers. This will be a monthly series to help injured workers understand the complex law in Pennsylvania regarding workers' compensation. This is our first podcast. My name is Tom Smallwood, Vice President of Marketing and Logistics for Cardamone Law. I'll be your host. I'll be asking the questions to Michael W. Cardamone, attorney and owner of the workers' compensation boutique firm Cardamone Law. Michael, how are you?
Great, Tom. Great to be with you.
Thanks for being here. All right, let's jump right into this hot topic today, the coronavirus and Pennsylvania workers' compensation. So, Michael, if an injured worker believes he or she has contracted the virus at work, what can they do and what should they do?
The first thing they want to do, Tom, is to report it. In other words, they have to give notice. If notice is not given within 120 days, then there's no claim. So essentially, the injured worker wants to report it to either a boss, a supervisor, or the owner, and tell that individual that they believe they contracted the virus at work. After that, there's probably going to be an incident report filled out. Most employers will require that. And the next issue will be treatment. A lot of the employers will have what's called a list of panel doctors for injured workers to see during the first 90 days. And there's some technicalities regarding that. But for the most part, the majority of employers will have that list for which the injured worker will have to then treat with one of those physicians. After notice is given, if the insurance company is doing the proper thing, they have 21 days to either accept the claim, deny it, or temporarily accept it. So they have three options in terms of what they have to file once notice is given within that 21-day period to investigate.
All right. So I'm going to give you a two-part question here. First part of this question is, what is my target number, 21 or 90?
21 days has to do with the time frame for which an insurance company or employer has to issue one of those three documents, the notice of compensation payable, notice of denial, or notice of temporary compensation payable. The 90-day period is the period during which, assuming the panelist is posted properly and the injured worker is given notice of it upon the start of employment, that 90 days is the period during which the injured worker must treat with one of the panel doctors designated by the employer.
Okay. I've heard you a few times here mention the term panel doctor. What is a panel doctor?
Panel doctor, Tom, is essentially a doctor that's designated by an employer where an injured worker, once they report a work injury, they have to treat with. Could be a family doctor. Sometimes there's a list of different types of doctors. There could be an orthopedic doctor on the panel, a chiropractor. A lot of times, however, you see a family doctor. That's usually the first place a lot of the injured workers start with in terms of treatment. And then the doctor can then make a referral appropriately in terms of whatever the injured worker needs for follow-up. So panel doctor, all that really means is list of doctors that the employer will designate ahead of time where you have to treat with them during that initial 90-day period.
Okay. So for a case like this, can I do this on my own, or am I really going to need to pursue a lawyer to get my case done?
It sounds self-serving, Tom, but it's just the truth. It's virtually impossible to win a Pennsylvania workers' compensation case on your own. In fact, at the first hearing, sometimes judges will hold what's called a pretrial hearing. The judges will warn the injured worker to try to seek counsel ASAP. Pennsylvania workers' comps become very complicated. In fact, there's an exam certifying certain individuals as specialists. I took that exam and passed it the first time it was given about 6 or 7 years ago. And basically, you had to pass a written exam and also establish that at least 50% of your practice is Pennsylvania workers' comp. For myself individually, as you know, 100% of our practice is workers' comp. But in any event, the bottom line is yes, an injured worker really needs an attorney. There's a lot of complexity with these cases, and especially with the coronavirus, which is a new dynamic in the system. And moreover, it's also expensive. Litigation can cost up to $10,000 sometimes. You have to take medical depositions from experts. There's transcript fees, medical record fees, and so on. So, although you can do this pro se, which is a term meaning for yourself, basically without an attorney, it's not recommended. It's really an uphill battle. And you got to remember the insurance company, the workers' comp carrier, they'll have an experienced defense counsel trying to minimize the case and poke holes in it the entire way. So trying to do this on your own on the claimant's end is just not wise.
Pre-trial, is that something I would have to go to?
It really depends. Some of the judges would like the injured workers at all the hearings, even if there's not going to be testimony. A pre-trial basically means a meeting with the attorneys and the judge to give a summary of the case, and for the judge to dispense deadlines for when the evidence is due. So I find in Philadelphia and the immediate suburbs, a lot of the judges, probably because of the caseload, they don't really care if the injured worker's there during the pre-trial hearing. Out in the middle of the state and further out, you tend to find a propensity where the judges seem to want the injured workers there at all the hearings. It is a case-by-case thing, judge by judge. But in general, at the pre-trial hearing, even if the injured worker attends, they're usually not testifying. The pre-trial is a basically just means the attorneys and the judges are going to go over the legal issues and the evidentiary deadlines.
So this isn't even a county by county basis, it's a judge by judge basis.
Exactly. So there, we have a portal for the attorneys and judges called WCAIS, WCAIS. And on there, you'll see a judge's questionnaire for each judge, and it'll spell out each individual judge's policies for evidence and pretrials and stipulations and whether you can attend proceedings by phone and what happens with bad weather and all types of detail. So whenever I get a petition assigned to a judge, the first thing that I do is I pull that questionnaire out, find out, okay, what does this judge want? What do they expect? And that way you can follow their guidelines, instead of, if you don't do that, you can get yourself in trouble pretty quickly.
Now, this all sounds very complex and complicated and very expensive. So, what would it cost an injured worker to hire a firm like ours?
Well, it's a contingent fee system, so that's the good news. What that means is there's no outlay by the injured worker. They do not have to send us any money. We actually cover the cost for litigation, for the transcripts and medical records and expert deposition fees. So contingent just means that they only pay us if we win or settle the case. And all the fees in Pennsylvania workers' comp must be approved by a judge. So if we go to court, somebody has a denied claim, we fight it, we win, then we're going to get 20% of the wage loss benefits that we secured. Conversely, if somebody's already on workers' comp and the insurance company is attacking their benefits by either a petition to modify, suspend, or terminate, then, and if we fend them off successfully, at that point, we start getting 20% of their weekly or biweekly checks. Another scenario where we would get paid is if we settle the case for a lump sum. There are cases, however, that I've had for 5, 10 years and never have gotten a paid a penny on just because of the dynamic of the individual case. Sometimes we're monitoring a case and it never goes to court for different reasons and we never end up getting paid. And that's fine. Every case is different and they all shake out the way they shake out. But basically, the standard fee in Pennsylvania is 20%, and there's no cost. So, if you ever hear of a law firm asking an injured worker to send them money, that's not ethical and it's not proper. So, The contingent fee system is great. Basically levels the playing field for the injured worker so they can get representation without having to fork over any kind of cash.
Oh, that's great. That is such a burden off of the injured worker's mind. Not like they don't have a bunch of other stuff to worry about, you know, moving forward.
No, you nailed it, Tom. They have enough stress with the injury and the pain and trying to keep the household together and stressing, you know, they have bills to pay like everybody else. And by not having to pay the attorney out of their pocket, it really, you know, helps keep people sane in a really challenging time.
How long can something like this take from start to finish?
Well, the bad news is it can take up to a year. Here's why. The first hearing, the judge will give the injured worker 90 days, assuming it's our petition. Let's say the claim was denied by the insurance company. We then file what's called a claim petition. It gets assigned to a judge, and then you have a first hearing. The judge will basically follow what's called the special rules, and that gives each side 90 days for their evidence. So if it's our petition, we have 90 days for our evidence, perhaps the claimant's testimony and an expert medical deposition. And then the burden shifts to the defense, and they have 90 days to present their case. So there's 6 months right off the bat. After that, you might have, and sometimes that 90-day or 180-day period is extended for various reasons. You might have difficulty scheduling a doctor's deposition because of people's schedules or whatever. So 6 months would be pretty quick for the evidence to be finished. And then you have a period for the written arguments. They're called briefs. The judges will often give about 60 days for those. And that's essentially a written summary of the evidence and the law and why you should win on a given issue. And then you wait another month or two after that for the decision to show up. So if the case doesn't settle, it can take up to about a year, sometimes 8, 9, 10 months. Sometimes it can spill over a year. But if I had to give an estimate, I'd say, you know, 11 or 12 months would be the average. However, here's the good news, Tom. The good news is most cases settle, and that's a good thing for everybody because you know what the outcome is and everybody can move on, and you don't take the risk of going to a decision where the judge could decide everything against you or everything for your opponent. So I would say about 80-85% of the cases will settle in about 3 to 6 months after a given petition is filed. So bad news, can take up to a year to litigate a certain petition. The good news is that's only a minority of the time. Most of the time we're able to settle these cases for a lump sum payment.
I can't be out of work that long. I have to go back to work if I'm feeling better. So now what?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, basically that comes up all the time, and we want people to go back to work. That's the whole purpose of the system. But there are cases where somebody is not able to. They might be totally disabled and they have no choice and they're just waiting for the case to resolve. And in the meantime, they might get on Social Security disability. For cases like the one where you just mentioned, basically that's a limited claim. So if you return to work, either with the pre-injury employer or a different employer, and you start earning the same as you did pre-injury or more, then it would be a limited claim. And that would mean we're only seeking wage loss benefits for the time you went out until the time you went back and started earning the same or more as you did pre-injury. So that's a good thing. And it can make the cases settle much quicker because the insurance company sees that their exposure is limited. They don't like open-ended claims where an individual is out of work indefinitely. When somebody goes back to work, as in the hypothetical you just stated, that tends to get the cases settled quicker because sometimes it's cheaper for an insurance company to just pay a 3 or 4 week claim than spend $10,000 paying a defense attorney and spending money on an independent medical exam and depositions and so on. So in a situation like that, it can be a good thing to return to work. Somebody who has their earning power back And on top of it, the case will generally settle as well, at least for the time period that they were out. And the other issue would be whether medical is going to end or not. There are people who go back to work and they're able to get their pre-injury earning power back, but they're not fully recovered. So that's a different issue.
So I come to you. I'm a little nervous. I want to find out if my case is a good case or not. What factors do you use and what do you need to know in order to evaluate the strength of a case?
Well, in terms of the coronavirus, which is what's obviously a hot topic right now, given the pandemic that we're dealing with, the things I'm going to be looking for are similar to what I would look for in another type of case, but there's going to be some different angles with the coronavirus. So the first thing I would do is ask you, the injured worker, when did you first believe that your coronavirus could be related to your work activities? And when did you give notice? Because if they didn't give notice within 120 days of when they first believed their condition may be work-related, then it's game over. It doesn't matter, you know, if it turns into, sadly, a death claim or what. If you don't give that notice, your claim is barred forever. So the notice requirement is something I make sure was met. And so you don't have to give written notice, although that's helpful. As long as the injured worker can state under oath that they gave notice that they believe they had a work injury, that will pretty much satisfy that requirement. And then I'm going to be looking at the strength of the medical evidence. We'll request the medical records and take a close look at them and see whether our client reported this as a work injury, when they reported it, what the doctor said. Sometimes the doctors don't give or render their opinions on legal issues that we need. And we have to sometimes follow up and request what's called a narrative report, asking the doctor for his or her opinion about what are the diagnoses here, which are work-related, what are the restrictions, are they recovered, what treatment is reasonable and necessary. So to summarize, the things I'm going to be looking for are, when did you contract the coronavirus? Who did you tell at work? What did you tell them? When did you tell them? How did you tell them? Was it in person? Was it over email? And then I'm going to really zone in on the medical evidence at that point.
Okay, we're just about out of time, Michael. One more question if you have time.
Absolutely.
Have you been retained by any injured workers for a coronavirus case yet?
Yes, just this week. Sadly, it's a death claim. The individual passed, and we were retained by the widow. I've had some other calls, but I didn't think the cases had a lot of strength. This one in particular is, I think, a strong case. The injured worker was working at a meatpacking plant. In fact, they actually shut down because there's well over 100 employees who contracted the coronavirus there. So I think, and there's legislation that hasn't passed yet, but that's potentially going to be passed, that talks about certain workers in certain industries having a presumption of causation, meaning if you're a frontline worker or somebody working in a meatpacking plant, the legislation designates certain niches of the economy. And if you fall into one of those, the burden of proof legally is going to be reduced. There's going to be a presumption that the virus was contracted at work. And the other side has a chance to rebut it. But with that presumption of causation, it's going to make the case a lot easier. That being said, I think because it's so well publicized now that there's problems in the meatpacking plants and with frontline workers, I think the case that I've been retained for, we're going to have a pretty good shot at getting the benefits for the widow.
That's awesome, Michael. That's incredible. Well, we are out of time. So, Michael, it's been a pleasure speaking with you about coronavirus and Pennsylvania workers' compensation. We are out of time for today. Please join us again for our next podcast here at Cardamom Law University. And we remind you that if you have any legal matters, no matter what it is, we have a whole network of attorneys in different types of practices, and we can help refer you to the right attorney. Any comments, questions, concerns, you can contact us at www.cardamonelaw.com. Let me spell that out for you. It's www.cardamonelaw.com or by calling 215-206-9068. That number again was 215-206-9068. Is there any information you want to add to that, Michael, or did I hit that on the head?
You nailed it. That's great. Thanks so much, Tom.
And thank you for being here. And until next time, this is Tom Smallwood saying bye-bye, be safe, stay healthy, and we'll see you next month.